It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today. Alrighty. Howdy, 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 howdy. So, this is DJ Marcus, and man, talk about a busy news day. I've got so much, there's so much going on. What I did is I went through, read all my news, and then I pared it down and pared it down again, and then said, let's figure it out. And so now I've got a few stories that are a bit less hyper-focused on one thing. Not everything's about COVID-19. Hooray. So, let's begin with some national news in the United States. So, Brett Kavanaugh is one of the Supreme Court justices, and there was a decision at the beginning of the month that I just read this analysis, and it was kind of cool. This is from Rewire.news, which is a slight to the left kind of group, if I'm remembering properly. But the important news is right here. So in June, Medical Services versus Russo, it confirmed that anti-abortion admitting privilege laws are unconstitutional. It wasn't all good news from the court when it comes to sexual health rights and justice. An Agency for International Development versus Alliance for Open Society International, so it's AID versus AOSI. The conservative wing of the court ruled Monday it was just fine with the government ordering organizations to deliver a message they disagree with, in this case forcing U.S. organizations working to combat HIV and AIDS overseas to sign on to a moralizing statement condemning sex work in order to receive federal money. Justice Kavanaugh, handpicked by President Trump, see, this is why I think it's left-leaning, is it kind of is slanted here. But just picked for Trump to ensure drastic reduction of bodily autonomy when it comes to sex, wrote the majority opinion affirming, I'm not going to finish, that's just blah. The next part is, the plaintiffs in this case literally do life-saving work. They run programs to limit injection drug use in Uzbekistan and to prevent mother-to-child HIV transmission in Kenya. And so it goes on, it's a bit long, but the big thing is the conservative, it goes on to argue about like what you can and can't say, and the conservative argument against having the anti-gay cake shop bake a cake for the same-sex couple is like the baker has to make a wedding cake for them, they're being forced to say same-sex marriage is fine, and that's not okay. Okay, but the court throws this out with AID versus AOSI because here the U.S. government is literally forcing an organization to say something, like they have to write it out and put their name on it to say an anti-sex work statement they don't agree with. But the thing is that the government isn't making those organizations say anything. It's making their foreign affiliates do it. So these organizations use the same name, the same logo, the same branding, the same fonts and pictures. If a foreign affiliate of AOSI or any similar organization is forced to say they condemn sex works, it will most certainly will be assumed that AOSI agrees with that stance, even though the Supreme Court already decided AOSI couldn't be compelled to say something they disagree with. So I thought this was really neat. It's got one of the newer domain TLDs, Rewire.news, but it's a great article. It's pretty long, but it's an interesting thought, you know, compelling people to say something. And who has that right? And who can tell what party can force some other party to say something? So it's pretty interesting. I found it to be interesting. So now let's sandwich in some COVID news here. I killed the background music, by the way. I'll get to that story later, but let's just say background music is probably going to go away. So, all right, so let's talk about some interesting, what appears to be retribution against prisoners. So, this is from Mother Jones. And so, seven detainees sued ICE. The headline says, seven detainees sued ICE. Then they were transferred to a notorious Alabama jail. This story came out just recently. But on June 29th, Stephen Brown got woken up at 4 a.m., told that he was about to be moved from the jail in Clinton County, Pennsylvania. He didn't know where he was heading. Brown, who came to the U.S. from Jamaica as a teenager 40 years ago, learned that six other immigrant detainees were being transferred from the jail. He realized that seven of them had something in common. They were all suing Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So, story goes on. They were loaded in a van, taken down to Louisiana, then loaded on a bus, taken over to... they got taken over, then rode by bus over to the jail. So... Eunice Cho, a senior staff attorney, back to the article, Eunice Cho, a senior staff attorney at the ACLU, which is representing Brown, says ICE has long used transfers to the Deep South as a form of retaliation and to get people under jurisdiction of conservative judges. What's new is that those transfers now mean potentially exposing people like Brown, who has high blood pressure, to the virus that led them to sue for their release in the first place. They also risk spreading COVID-19 between detention centers. So she goes on, or Eunice Cho goes on, we're seeing ICE transfer people in a retaliatory manner. This is, of course, not a new thing. Done this for years before COVID broke out, but in light of the COVID pandemic, the risk to people because of transfer are even more heightened. ICE declined to comment, but in response to another ACLU lawsuit, ICE denied allegations that it transferred people from Massachusetts to the Alabama prison as retaliation for suing the agency. So... the article goes on, like everything, you know, the article goes on. But the reason the Alabama prison is especially interesting is because this is the one where the warden of the jail had been given $750,000 in budget to buy food. But the law is any leftover food money budget, the warden gets to keep. So he spent $10,000 for food for the whole year for the prison and then went and spent $740,000 to buy a house. So... that's why it's pretty crazy about a beach house. So that aside, that's the story anyway, or that's what's news to me, is that these guys were suing because they were in bad conditions in Pennsylvania, so then they got transferred. The transfer means they can't sue about, whoa, MBS SDF1 alert. Streaming for you live. Ah! That's cool. I got a wall announcement on my comm. Sorry about that. I was reading things as they appeared on my screen. So, that's well and good. It's kind of disturbing. People in prison are being treated pretty poorly. So, let me do one other less terrible COVID story, and that's in Florida. And Florida governor, this is from The Independent, which is I believe it's a UK paper. It's a co.uk domain. Anyway. All right. So Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was interrupted by protesters during a press conference on Monday when he asked residents with COVID-19 to donate blood amid a spike in COVID coronavirus cases. The event was hosted at the Orlando office of a blood donation agency called One Blood, was intended to highlight the importance of donating plasma to help tackle the coronavirus pandemic in Florida. One of the treatments that many physicians around the state believe is very effective is the use of convalescent plasma. So, convalescent plasma is people who've survived. It goes on that... however, this press conference was interrupted when a group of protesters shouted at the governor, "Shame on you, and you're lying to the public." The group shouted criticisms for around 30 seconds. "You have blood on your hands." The protesters were then escorted out of the building by police officers, and the governor responded by saying, "We will not be defunding the police, so don't worry about that. We're going to keep supporting our men and women in law enforcement." So, that, my friends, is how he isn't just... Anyway, let's keep a calm, Marcus. Let's not get worked up. But yeah, that's going on in the United States. So we'll go ahead and play a fun song. Or at least I think it's fun. It's going to be another one of from that NG Records record that I played yesterday. But these will be a little bit different. Like they're just old 90s punk songs. So this one is from a band called Spider Virus. It's called Hate to Know She Breathes, which I found to be exceptionally timely. Oh, I'm so sorry. And big shout out. Thanks to SMJ and Jazzmaz for tuning in. And RIP the C-16. It is dead. Is this loud enough? The 9-volt DC power supply.
Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
And with that, we are back. Welcome, Exiled, and welcome everyone else. This is news to me. I'm DJ Marcus. You're listening to Anon Radio. So let's talk about some international news. This is actually breaking news. Breaking news. This was fresh as of 39 minutes ago. Police in the Ukraine are involved in a tense standoff with an armed man who took about 20 people hostage on a bus in the western city of Lutsk. After several hours of negotiations, three of the hostages were released. Officers earlier said they had come under fire and a grenade was thrown, although it did not explode. The hostages are said to be unharmed. The man has been named by police as Maxim Krivosh, 44, from Russia, who has previous convictions. He is said to be demanding that senior politicians state they are terrorists. Interior Minister Arsen Avakov is leading negotiations with the hostage taker. He said the hostages, who have been on the bus for several hours, were well and the authorities were doing everything they could to resolve the crisis quickly and peacefully. He denied earlier reports that Krivosh had undergone psychiatric treatment. The hostages released were an elderly woman, a teenager, and a pregnant young woman. The photo in the article shows a man wearing a beret with some kind of insignia on it. And he's got long hair. He's some white Russian dude. Pictures from the scene showed officers of the counterterrorism security service surrounding the bus. Police said two shots had been fired from it, and the man claimed to also have explosives. The attacker threw a grenade from the bus, which fortunately did not detonate, a statement said. So, good luck to the guys there. That seems like that could be a pretty harrowing situation and a pretty wild excuse for why you couldn't make it to work. So, good luck. And that was coming from our friends on the BBC. So, France 24, coming at you here. Sudan adjourns the trial against ousted President Bashir over the 1989 coup. So this is pretty short, but basically a Sudanese court has already handed Bashir a 2-year sentence in December on corruption charges. He faces trials and investigations over the killing of protesters. State TV broadcast the judge opening the hearing at a court in Khartoum without showing footage of Bashir. He's been in jail since he was toppled in April last year following mass protests. In December, his lawyer told reporters it was political trial par excellence, more than 30 years after the event. Before any statement or evidence could be given, the trial was adjourned until August 11th to reconvene in a larger court to allow more lawyers and family members of the defendants to attend. Some lawyers had complained their colleagues had not been able to get into the Tuesday's session. Other defendants included former allies of Bashir, such as former Vice President Ali Osman Taha and Ali al-Haj, Secretary General of the Islamic Popular Congress Party, PCP. So, it was kind of neat. There was, in general, just a nice event. Well, not a nice event. In general, they went to have a trial, and so many people showed up, they had to reconvene into a bigger courtroom. So, wow, that's awesome. It's good that the people are involved in the process. Okay, and Oh, yeah, and then it's kind of a fun story, but and it's international because it's an international thing, but I learned Hacker Public Radio is still going strong. I had listened to Hacker Public Radio back in the early 2000s and thought that, I think it was the early 2000s. It was a long while ago. Oh yeah, it started in 2005. Sounds right. So anyway, I listened to this and I listened off and on, but when I just assumed it died out because there was a time where I wasn't getting any new shows. So I just wrote it off, thought they were dead. Well, then Claudio M, SDF member Claudio M, he's also on the Tildeverse, he pointed out, hey, this was a great episode. It's like, oh crud, they're still going on. So anyway, just wanted to throw out there at Hacker Public Radio, I'll probably figure out something of interest and do a show there. I know there's a cooking segment. I could do a cooking show or something. Anyway. And Exiled saw that too. If you want, you can also join Calm and hang out. But we've got 10 minutes till Tobe, which means it's time for a song. Where'd you go? Sorry, I've got my nose clogged up. You know what? We're going to play something that I just have been... It's been in my head all day. It's called Don't Tread on Me. Where you at? Don't tread on me. Waiting, wait. Don't tell me I don't have it. Aw, shucks. This is terrible radio. Sorry. I totally thought that I had had a cool song, but I don't. So instead, let's just go over here. Stall, Marcus, stall. You know what? I'll read you an Austin news story, and then we'll play a song. So, Austin, two things. One, Cat Metro. This is from the Austin Monitor, a great local publication. The Capital Metro Transit Authority ticket-based fare system is due for an upgrade. So, currently, it lacks the flexibility to offer benefits like fare capping, while encouraging more points of contact between customers and bus operators than contactless account-based ticketing can provide. So, the buses in Austin, you put money in or you buy a prepaid, and you get a paper card with a magnetic stripe on it, and that's how you use that card over and over. If you want, though, you can use the app. And if you use the app, then you can buy the same digital card and put it on your phone. But then to use it, it scans a QR code on your phone. But those are ticket, they're still ticket-based. So what they're doing is, in a unanimous vote Monday, the board of director approved a $6 million contract with Bitemark, the company behind the existing digital ticket validation software, to rebuild the digital payment software around personal accounts rather than purchase tickets. So that's going to allow you to have an account, and so as you pay, and you can link it to your debit card. And so then, as you pay, as you're buying your tickets, if you're just paying for single fares, once you've paid the amount that a weekly ticket would cost, it won't charge you anymore. And then once you've ridden the number of times that a monthly pass would charge you, it won't charge you anymore. So it kind of caps your rate so that you're always getting the best price. So I think this will be neat. It's sad that there's not an open source solution or like some kind of free software they could have used. But hey, this is in the Austin Monitor if you want to check it out. And I guess I'm just going to play a kind of cheesy song. This, my friends, will play about 2 minutes of Stayin' Alive off of a record. That's right. This is the only time you're going to hear disco on a non-radio.
DJ Marcus.
folks. Like I said, we're only going to get 2 minutes of that song because we've got a couple more stories. Boom, boom. So, the reason there's no background music, because I was reading the Hacker Public Radio submission guides and they said, hey, don't use a sound bed because people who listen to podcasts or listen to things on replay often play them back at a faster rate. And when they do, it's hard for them to hear. And then I went and looked more into it, and it's like, if you have a sound bed, it's harder for people to understand you, and it makes it just, all in all, it's a lot less intelligible for people. So the sound bed's probably going to be gone, except for like interstitials and stuff if I need it. So, boom, just an FYI. So let's go back to Austin real quick before we get into jump out of the way for the Tobe adventure. Hey, X1 is made in French. All right, so the public safety budget discussion in Austin is heating up. So right now the budget is about $434 million. And proponents of reducing the budget say $200 million could be reduced if the police just stopped buying tanks and stuff. Welcome, DJ Tobe. All right, so Chief Financial Officer Ed Van Eno gave the Public Safety Committee a public safety budget overview at its meeting Monday. And we have some public safety resources built that no longer match the types of public safety needs that the community needs, Chair Jimmy Flanagan said, and there are some good reasons for that, but a lot to dig in here. Grassroots Leaderships, one of the organizations demanding a reduction in the budget, said City Manager Kronk ignored demands. The group's petition asked Kronk to defund the department by half and divert those funds to public health, anti-displacement efforts, and the city's equity office. In his presentation, Van Eno explained that the budget office starts a new budget with the past fiscal year as a base. To that, the office adds the mandated wage increases, on top of that, anticipated adding the known quantities that are expected, like 30 officers this next fiscal year. Those two things add about $8 million to the budget. And so they got rid of some of those, and then that's how you get $200,000 reduction. Assistant City Manager also said the management team is working on a report to council that outline what the city can change and what will take more careful review in order to avoid legal challenges. That report's due in August, and there's a council meeting on Thursday. So, yeah, it's pretty wild, right? I want to call out two articles since we don't have time to read them or go over them. One, there's a site called it's Dissent Magazine, but let me get the title. Yeah, oh, it's just dissentmagazine.org. And this is I'm filling a lot. The Dissent Magazine had a case for universal voting, and it was really interesting. I found it to be something to really think about. And basically the argument is, using as a case study, they said, hey, in Australia they do this and it works really well. There's 90% voter turnout, and what that would do to the US. And then in North Carolina, a woman who was on probation didn't know that she couldn't vote while she was on probation. So she went and voted. That got to court. The court said, okay, we'll drop it. Well, when they said they'll drop it, what they didn't say was that, oh, well, anyway, they dropped that, but then got her for signing her voter registration card swearing she could vote.
Well, that sound means that darn our time's coming to an end.
Thanks for listening.
I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC.